This is Swan.
And this is Nasa.
And you're listening to
Ink and Worm on Radio Free Brooklyn.
Coming to you live from the basement of the Velo Bike Shop in Bushwick, Brooklyn. yeah, all that stuff. Today we're talking to Kate Longafano. Longafano.
Like a long gone fawn.
I broke it down phonetically. I said it in my room. I tried to repeat it just now. Appreciate effort. I
know. It was a very strong effort.
I still failed though. Longafano.
Yeah, there you go. You'll get there one way or another.
Eventually. She is a Sarah Lawrence alumni, poet, co-curator of Dead Rabbits Reading Series. And you write beautiful poetry that is quote-unquote disturbing to some people.
I mean, I think most things are going to be disturbing to some people in this universe of ours.
You might offend someone no matter what you do.
Oh, absolutely. But yes, I have been known to write particularly offensive poetry. Or not offensive, I wouldn't say that, but...
Yeah, I was reading actually a review of your book on Goodreads, and I was like, this woman's like really precise and flattering. Have you read that one?
Is that I think there's only one review of my work ever.
The Angel of Sex.
Yeah, so I'm pretty sure is that by Mary Stone.
Mary Dockery wrote this long.
This is like a little bit of cheating. Mary is my poet soulmate, and I love her deeply, and we've done many collaborations together. But she wrote that of her own volition, and I did not know it existed until it was out in the world. And I so appreciate her precision and very kind words about my poetry, especially because I wrote that. Oh, I wrote that book a long time ago, so it feels a little bit like ancient history now.
Yeah, when was that out? 2013?
It came out in 2014 officially. I wrote it in, oh my god, like in 2010 or 2011. I wrote it when I was a wee poet.
And was it done or was it resting or constantly changing?
It was constantly changing during the about like the year long period it took me to write it. And then I sent it out to a bunch of places, like edited it a few times. But between the time it got picked up for publication, which was in 2011, and the time it got published, which is like 4 years later, I didn't really change it a lot. I went back and revisited it right before it came out just to make some tweaks and stuff. But at that point, I was like, oh, my God, I've read these poems so many times. Like, I don't want to touch them anymore.
Yes. Perfectionism or just, like, it becomes mud. It's like painting. You're, like, too many.
Yeah.
You can over-edit.
Exactly. And I definitely fall victim to over-editing my own work often, so I'm trying to like train myself not to now.
What is so in like time percentages on one, let's say one complete poem, how much of that time do you feel like you spend in editing?
Oh, most of it.
Like 75%,
like
66%.
I mean, well, that's a hard question to answer because I edit as I write, too, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, I sit down and I write the poem, and I'm, like, tinkering with it and moving things around, and, like, I start to write something, and I'm like, no, that's crap, and I take it out, like, immediately. Mm-hmm. But definitely, I mean, it takes me – I write my poems very quickly. I would say, like, I sit down and in 15 minutes, I have, like, air quotes, a finished poem in that I'm like, okay, here is a draft of it. And then everything moving forward from that point is editing. So yeah, most of my time is spent in the editorial process, which is good because writing is intimidating and, like, I'd rather look at things I've already written than stress out over generating.
Yeah, look multiple times to, like, create one thing rather than just spewing out whatever comes to mind, that train of thought, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
Both have their merit, I would say. Did you bring any poems to read today specifically? Or
I mean, I can. I have them all on this great intelligent device we keep on our persons called a smartphone.
Everything in one device.
What would we do without it?
I know. Well, I mean, honestly, because I haven't, you know, like, who has a printer anymore, honestly?
I do.
Okay, well, you're like a beautiful seraphim, so.
No, it's useful when you're printing it or when you're working on slides. You need to have them, like, in person as opposed to, like, in the ether.
Yeah, yeah, that makes sense. I am not that prepared most of the time. Like, I just don't have that foresight. So I keep most of my writing on my laptop, and then I also back it up on, you know, the cloud, whatever you want to call it, so I can access it anywhere, which comes in handy for days like today when I just got here and I was like, oh, should I have brought poems with me? I think I can get them on my phone. So
yeah. Or we were at a bar the other night and there was like an open mic and we were both like, should we do something?
Yeah.
And I looked on my phone and I couldn't find what I was looking for, which was strange because I've started saving a lot of things to my phone for that reason. It's so handy to just be like, oh, it's right here. Yeah. Well, if you want to think about a poem that's like popping to mind or that you'd like to read, I would love to listen to it.
Okay.
As you start looking on your device.
I mean, I have the entire Virus collection right in front of me.
Yeah,
so.
Which is the, I was introduced to you with that series. Is that what you call it?
Yeah. I mean, it's still a work in progress, but that was an instance of like, writing this, so right now this collection is like 15 pages long, and unlike most of my other writing, I sat down and wrote it like straight through. Usually I kind of like patchwork different pieces together that are sort of thematically attached, and for this I went to a writing residency and I spent a week just writing all day every day.
Oh, wow.
And it was amazing. It was so productive. And like, this was a collection that's kind of been like sitting in me for a while, but I didn't feel really like brave enough to write it because it felt very like, it's like difficult topic material. It's like dealing with stigma and like sexuality and all kinds of like fucked up judgments. And like, I write a lot of angry poems about men. So it was like extra angry towards men in a lot of ways, which, you know, I'm not going to apologize for that, but it's still like you get a certain amount of like pushback from people for that. So I don't remember where I was going with that.
You just sat down and write it as opposed to.
Yeah, I went through and I just like wrote it all. And so it's been kind of a different process since then, just having this body of work to like work with. So it was really cool when I met you, Swan. It was at the Nomadic Press reading series, and Dallas and Charlie, who put that together, they paired me up with this incredible artist, Jamie Powell, and they just had me come out and were like, yeah, read whatever you want. So I just got to read like all of my Virus poems to a really extremely compassionate and like engaged audience.
Oh, we loved them.
Yeah.
We were like holding our breath. They were beautiful. Did you want to share excerpt or?
Yeah, I could do that. I could give the audience a little taste.
Just in case you've never heard of Katie Longonfano. Damn it.
Longonfano.
I like that. That's gonna be like if I ever join like a band on the run, like with on a horse, I'll be like Katie Longonfano.
We have an objective for this show. By the end of the show, everyone who's listening will be able to pronounce your last name.
This is great.
At the very least, we will.
At the very least, we'll have every mnemonic trick.
So I would be really happy to read a couple poems from this. I don't know how much or how little do you want.
Five minutes.
Okay. Let's do two. Let's do less. And I'm gonna read.
I mean, I could listen to them all day, but I also want to talk to you because that's why we're here. I think too.
Yeah. No. So let's read. This poem makes me laugh and makes everyone else laugh a lot, and I think it's hysterical. Some people probably think it's less hysterical, but all that to say, I'm gonna read this to you, and it's kind of. I guess this is a good starting point for the rest of the collection because it all kind of ekes out of this. So this is called The Virus Tries Online Dating. I don't want to date anymore, but I logged on to Tinder to use a line my best friend and I coined. Dan is the first person to ask me out since the virus. Lucky Dan. I write back, well, I have herpes for the rest of my life, but other than that, I'm free. He does not respond for 33 minutes. My heart goes still, even though this is a joke. Dan says it's good to get things out in the open. Dan just got out of a 7-year relationship, doesn't know how dating works. I do, but nobody wants to commit to the virus. I walk to a wooden bar, and Dan is smoking outside, waiting for me. He's not as cute as I thought. We talk for 3 hours. I smoke all his cigarettes, and he buys more. I like the wry twist of his mouth, his arm beside my thigh, where I am perched above him on the porch railing. We don't leave until 1 a.m., when I ask pointedly what train he needs to take. Time to go, Dan. Instead, we break into a construction site, where he kisses me on a pile of bricks. We climb dismantled staircases, and later he puts my nipple in his mouth, and on our next date we have sex, and the next, and the next. We do this for months. We don't discuss the virus. In fact, we don't accept that first time. Eventually, we take a walk. He goes, I've been irresponsible with your feelings. I say, okay, I should go now. Squeeze out one tear on the subway. So that's a little,
oh, wow.
A little snippet.
Yeah. I was kind of watching Nace out of the corner of my eye because I was like.
Oh, did you not warn her?
No. No, I don't give warnings. This is life. It's not signs
Bitch.
Everywhere.
Life doesn't come with warnings. Yeah, my poems don't come with warnings either.
No, that was beautiful.
Yeah, well, I mean, and So there's value in the shock factor of just like pushing people to think beyond something they're comfortable thinking about.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also value in, I don't know, there's like a honesty mm-hmm. about it that almost makes the shock less because you're like, oh, is that? Makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, I would say it's a very deliberate resistance against censorship because that's like an idea I feel like I'm always kind of revolving around the edges of. Like when you're writing any sort of work that is like vulnerable or personal or just uncomfortable, anything that's uncomfortable. You know, I've written tons of persona poems that are, like, so sharply divided from me or my experience, but they're uncomfortable topics, and I still feel kind of like, ooh, do I, like, want to, like, own this as something I've written? And it's like, yeah, fuck yeah, I want it. Like, I have to own it. Because then what are you doing when, I don't want to be, like, a coward about it. Like, if this is something I'm writing and I'm putting out into the world, then I got to take responsibility for it one way or another, and that's just what I'm doing.
Yay! Responsibility is good.
Yeah.
We were talking a little bit, and you mentioned that there's an element of reading a poem that's less personal, maybe, than telling your own story.
Yeah. I mean, because you can always be like, that's the speaker. Yeah. Like, that's not really me. Even though I do, like, draw from autobiography a fair amount for
and
my work.
And it's a way for you to process your life.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So it is, it's very different getting up, like, on a stage with a poem than it is with, like, an essay or, like...
Like a story.
A story yeah. or, like, a diary entry or something,
yeah,
you know?
We had someone come on last week who told stories, but autobiographical stories from her life. And
mm-hmm.
And I have a lot of fear of doing that because I feel like I'm either outing myself or outing people in the story. Like, even if I change names, you know, obviously, I don't know, and then... So I think lately my process is, like, I've been maybe hyper fixated on fiction.
Yeah.
And like, it's fiction. It's not my life. It's fiction. I made it up. But I don't know. Maybe that's not my path. Maybe I should own my stories.
Well, I don't know. I think you can do a little bit of both. Because then it becomes this issue where people are like, oh, well, if you're writing this true thing, it's not really true because, like, you didn't get X, Y, and Z. Why, like, creative writing? Because it's, I mean, it's true, but it's a different kind of truth. It's, like, how you filter it as the writer. Like, you're selecting it and kind of, you know, most of my poems have truthful I almost said elephants. They have truthful elephants to them.
Oh, no, I love that, though.
Truthful elephants. It reminds me of E.E. Cummings with his enormous smallness. Yeah. There's a children's book out that has some beautiful illustrations. A little plug. I'll put a link.
Please do. I'm so intrigued by that. But so I have truthful elephants and elements in my work, but that... It's not following the narrative of how things happened exactly by any means. And I'm never going to like swear that on a Bible to people, you know. Mm-hmm. It's like more of a mishmash of like all of these different qualities I see in the world. And then it comes out in this kind of compressed way in a poem because there's no way you could put everything you actually wanted to say or portray as true in a poem. There's just not room. There's not time. And it would also be a terrible poem.
Yeah. It's all about the insinuations, the subtext, the things you're not saying.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. Hence editing.
Yeah, and also, like, me saving my own ass because a lot of people would be really mad about these virus poems. Like, Dan. Sorry, Dan. It's not really true.
Yeah. Well, and... So we talked a little bit about your personal experience of that happening to you and you processing it. Where is my question going? Who knows? Okay, my question is going to what were your like focuses before that in this residency? So talk about some of your older work.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, I've always written pretty like... I call it my angry feminist poems because they are angry feminist poems. Like, I've always been super concerned with women's issues and, like, issues of control and lack of control and, like, how power struggles happen and how they work. So for The Angel of Sex, which was, like, my first collection, that was... very much about, like, sexuality and the body and how, like, as women, like, our bodies go through these processes that we don't really control. It's biological. And so it's a lot of poems about pregnancy and sex and, like, you know, there's some, like, rape and abortion and, like, all that fun stuff.
All the things that happen.
Yeah.
The wonderful things that make you a woman.
Yeah.
Or just like these issues that we have to navigate. I mean, I don't want to say like everyone has had an abortion, but I think that it's a situation that you need to understand.
Well, it's something that everyone... As a woman, it's something that you have that possibility of running into, especially if you embrace your sexuality. Like, your chances go up ridiculously. And if you don't want kids, they go up higher.
I mean, let's talk about personal experience. I was horrified of getting pregnant for, I would say, the majority of my dating life. Like, I've just been horrified of, like, it's like a visceral fear. And honestly, in certain relationships, it ended the relationship because I was like, I don't want to have your baby, which means that we shouldn't have sex anymore ever.
That can be problematic for a relationship.
Yeah, sure. And most guys don't want to.
What? They don't want to hear that?
What? Yeah, so.
Or could still do mouth stuff.
Oh, my goodness. Well.
Well, that's a different can of worms.
Yeah, but I mean, everyone has that, their personal experience and their personal, like, I guess, belief structures and awareness of the freedoms and options they have.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways. And the world needs some angry feminist poems.
Yeah. Yes. I'm happy to help.
So, and you got an MFA.
Yeah, yeah. I got a master's in poetry at Sarah Lawrence, which was super fun and an amazing experience. That's why I moved to New York City. I came out here to get my MFA, and it was crazy, and it was great, and it was like a really difficult 2 years. Like, it's not easy.
It wasn't a cakewalk.
Yeah, it wasn't a cakewalk. It wasn't easy moving to New York City, like, essentially by myself, but I made, like, so many amazing, like, writing connections and friends, like, other people in the program with me who I'm still, you know, I still keep in touch with. And
so did the, is it Dead Rabbit?
Dead Rabbits, yeah.
Dead Rabbits reading series. Mm-hmm. Did that evolve from college?
Yeah, that came from Sarah Lawrence.
It's still happening now?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, you guys should all come and hang out. And yeah, okay, so I'll start from, like, where it started. But you look like you're going to say something.
I was going to ask when it was.
Yeah.
Where.
Yeah, so it happens. It changes. It's supposed to be the second Sunday of every month.
Because that's what I did some research, and I was like, I don't see it really posted, so thanks for asking, Nathan.
Yeah, it's supposed to be the second Sunday of every month, but, like, it ends up getting pushed around. But, I mean, we're on Facebook and Twitter, which we're very active on. But it's always on a Sunday at 8 p.m. once a month.
I'm going to pull one of these, which is follow them on
Facebook at Dead Rabbits NYC. And I think that's our Twitter handle as well.
Google can help you find it.
Google can help you, but don't confuse us with the Dead Rabbits bar downtown. We're not them.
You're not a bar.
We're not a bar. People will, like, tag us and be like, we're at Dead Rabbits. I'm like, you are not here right now, actually.
None of us are.
None of us are here.
What's happening?
But no, you should really come, and we're taking a little hiatus for the summer. But
that's what I was going to, because I noticed it.
But we're coming back on August 7th for an extra special episode, iteration, whatever. We're partnering with The Conversation, which is doing really important work, bringing people of color on a paid tour of readings all across the South as a way to, like, reclaim your body and your experience and just space as a writer, like, giving voice and income, because writers don't usually get paid for what they do. So it's going to be a fundraiser for them. We're bringing a bunch of the writers who are part of the Conversation Fellowship Program to Dead Rabbits, and we're going to, like, sell tickets and raise money for them and help them on their journey. And it's, like, so relevant and necessary right now. So I just really encourage everyone to come hang out and support it.
Let's all come.
Sounds amazing.
And you're, like, helping. I love, like, things that I'm helping something, you know?
I mean, it was not even a decision. It was like, yes, of course. Like, take my money. Oh, my God. You guys are incredible.
Yeah. Anyone I know, you can ask them for money, too. Just big web. Yeah, nice. And then so the reading series evolved from Sarah Lawrence.
Yeah,
Kind of telling the backstory of how that evolved, giving voice to New York poets. And on your website, there's a tag of, like, we don't want to have to go to Brooklyn, which is ironic because it's in Harlem, right?
Mm-hmm.
You don't live in Harlem any longer?
No. So at the time when it started, we all lived in Harlem.
You're like, we want poetry here.
Yeah, and we wanted poetry there. And we were tired of going to Brooklyn because, like, we did it for the entire 2 years when we were at Sarah Lawrence, because there's nothing in Westchester. That's where Sarah Lawrence is. Like, there's really not much of a writing community up there. So we would always come into the city for readings, and it's like, it takes like an hour and a half to get there. And then when we moved to Harlem, it was the same thing. All of the readings are either on the Lower East Side or just random places in Brooklyn, which are amazing and really fun. But we're like, there are writers up here too, like above, you know, 42nd Street.
Yeah. So it's kind of nice. I guess you could say you're the first to start something, or like a niche?
There were a handful of other ones, and we all, like, definitely work in partnership. There's Lamprophonic on the Upper West Side, and there are sister series. Like, we do have collaborations with them. And there's one in the Bronx, and I'm sure there are more, but we're doing our own thing, so we just hope people come and hang out with us, basically.
I'll come hang out with you.
You should. It's really fun. And so we just started it because at the time I was living with the other Katie. It's two Katies and Devin run it. And we were at 110th and 3rd, and we were like, yeah, this is at 90th Street. Like, we could walk there. So it was really nice to just, like, have this amazing coffee shop and bar, DTUT, who were so generous with their space and time and just let us take over once a month and bring writers in to share their work. So
yes,
it's been great. It's been really fun.
That's amazing. Thanks for doing that and for sharing about it.
I
mentioned in the email I sent you that we like to do a free writing exercise. Mm-hmm. So it's called river writing, and basically it's seated in poetry free write. So I'll read a poem, and as I'm reading, try and like listen and grab the line or the phrase or idea that's standing out to you, mm-hmm. and use that as a starting place. We'll set the timer for like 5-ish minutes, and then I'll give you warnings. At the end of it, you're welcome to read or you don't have to. It's just an invitation.
Cool.
Any questions? It's pretty complicated. If you get stuck, go back to that first line. Okay, so poem today is The Guest House. And this is a poem by Rumi. And let me get to the right spot. Thanks for your patience. Okay. The guest house. This being human is a guest house. Every morning a new arrival. A joy, a depression, a meanness. Some momentary awareness comes as an unexpected visitor. Welcome and entertain them all. Even if they're a crowd of sorrows who violently sweep your house empty of its furniture, still treat each guest honorably. He may be clearing you out for some new delight. The dark thought, the shame, the malice, meet them at the door laughing and invite them in. Be grateful for whoever comes because each has been sent as a guide from beyond. about 1 more minute with writing, so finding the winding down of that thought. Cool, thanks for doing that with me. Ooh, there we go. So here's the invitation. Anyone interested in sharing?
I don't think I did anything worth reading.
If it makes you feel any better, mine was pretty much just a journal entry. The one thing that I did really enjoy, I guess, I made a comparison to this. Let me see. Is it me or does it sound like a really dark version of Inside Out?
Which I haven't seen.
Oh my goodness, how have
I know.
You not seen you that?
Dressed yeah, up as characters for Halloween. And Inside Out is a Disney movie.
I'm a child. Feelings. It's fine. It's I'm a child.
About feelings?
Yeah. So basically,
I'm
the
sure
idea,
you heard about it. It's supposedly really great.
It's starring Amy Poehler and Phyllis from The Office as happiness, joy, and sadness. And it's like joy. It's about an 11-year-old girl, and it's like joy trying to come to terms with the fact that sadness is there, and that sadness sometimes takes over. And it's beautiful.
Oh, I love that.
It's so beautiful. Yeah. And so listening to this poem, I was like, oh, man, this is just like a dark Inside Out. And it's about embracing sadness. Yeah. So that
wow.
You can
what does
it,
say about me, though, that before I knew what Inside Out was, I was like, this sounds like a weird horror movie about like humans turning their bodies inside out. Like, ugh.
It's just could sad be. Because like. I am used to just always seeing Disney movies, or at least being familiar with them, mm-hmm. especially Pixar. I can understand not yeah. seeing, like, Frozen, but Pixar.
Didn't do Frozen for a long time.
I saw it, and I regretted it. But
me too.
But then I go up to people who are my age, and I'm like, Inside Out is amazing, right? And they're like, why are you watching children movies?
No, it's honestly kind of strange that I haven't seen this, because I am a huge fan of children's movies, and conceptually I really like the idea of the show. I just haven't seen it yet.
Well, I highly recommend seeing it / I own it. So if you ever want to borrow.
Movie night.
Yeah. We're supposed to have a movie night at your house anyways.
We
because
need one.
You have a wall full of these drawings that are theoretical architecture renderings of directors' houses.
Yeah. So like this architect drew houses the way he would imagine that these directors would want their houses. And it's a perfect combination of like my interests and my boyfriend's interests because he's mm-hmm. an architect and I'm an actor. And so we were trying to find art and he was like, this. And I was like, oh my God, it's perfect.
Yes. Yeah.
So we're like, oh, we should watch a film from each like director and then be like, now
oh,
I understand
I
why
that.
His house is like that.
Yeah, because I don't know any of them.
I know, like, it's so funny that you're like, it's like the melding of our interests, except I haven't
seen
it. I don't know these
movies.
Guys. I know the other ones.
Like, I know this one and this one, and that's it.
That's fine.
Yes.
Yeah, right. It's a good theoretical.
Thank you for sharing, Nisa. Yeah. You're welcome to share. It doesn't have to be good.
It's really not. Good. I think I'd prefer not to. I'm really bad at free writes, actually. So, that's why I edit my work so much.
Oh, good. I know, but I like the liberty this gives me. Like, I mm-hmm. literally just wrote this in 5 minutes. So,
yeah,
judge me if you want. But this is, yeah. So I'll read because I think it's good for me. This being human, so often limited by short-sightedness, limited by vision and scope, or perhaps this humanity is both a crutch and a salvation. A sort of now that you don't have to be perfect, you can be good kind of thing. I'm grateful for humans, for people who show up, who answer the phone, who come bearing gifts, or come with nothing at all. I'm grateful for humans, for those who did not show up, who stopped responding, who manipulated, who were afraid. Those who hit too hard and those who did not hit hard enough. I'm grateful for spectrum, for the scope, the potential. I'm grateful to be limited. I'm grateful to have limitations lifted as belief structure adjusts to new information. This being human is you and me making eye contact, and we either hold gaze or break it. But for that second, we were seen. We were connected. We were human.
Nice.
Thank you.
Clap, 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 clap.
Yeah, a snap.
Oh, yeah, that's probably more appropriate.
So if you just tuned in, we just read from a free write, talked about a free write, and you're listening to Ink and Worm on Radio Free Brooklyn. If you like what you hear and want to support community radio, radiofreebrooklyn.com/pledge, and you can become part of the community, buy us a drink or coffee, and we'll be your friend. So let's talk a little bit more about you.
Ooh. I'm just kidding. Feeling the spotlight.
So Kid Katie, was she carrying around a notebook writing things down?
Kid Katie was not, and I still don't carry around a notebook. I'm a bad version of a writer.
So the phone has really been an implementation that's helped you write more, perhaps?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, actually, I think it's very fun to go through my notes section of my phone every few months, and like, there's just all of these... It's random crap that I've written down from conversations, and it's hysterical and very, very useful for me. But back to the
best things are those random things where you're like, I don't even remember who said that, but that's so great.
Yeah. I have a collection of like chapbook titles that I have just picked up from like random turns of. Actually, I kind of want to read it to you guys now.
Oh, yes,
yeah,
they're really good. They're like beautiful things. Because I have very poetic friends because I surround myself with artists and wonderful people.
Which I highly recommend, by the way.
Yeah.
Seems like a good way to...
It is. Okay. It's... Okay, sorry. I'm going through and looking for this, and, like, one of the things I have written down is Halloween idea, Big Mouth Billy Bass.
That's a good idea.
So maybe I'm going to dress up like that. Okay, so here are a bunch of titles that have come out of conversations. The Science of Child Rearing. Conifers Instead of Cacti. You Gave a Poet Numbers, which I remember that conversation. Like, my boss tried to give me a bunch of things to add up, and I was like, I don't know what you're doing. You gave a poet numbers. This is a bad idea. I'm not going to balance your budget. Like, everything is fucked up now.
And it's legitimate.
Didn't like my argument, but I stand by it. Analog clickbait. In quotation marks, I'll be the person, you be the inhuman scream. And not all people in purgatory are bad.
That one's really pretty.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah. Sometimes you just take a wrong turn and end up in purgatory.
Well, especially because purgatory is, like, where bad. You end up if... No, hell is bad. Purgatory is, like, you're just not good.
Oh, right.
Which is most of us.
Yeah, it's like oh...
I'm gray.
Yeah, you did it. You did a couple of things that don't fall into, like, the you're welcome into heaven pass.
Which is my issue with religion.
Yeah.
I have a pass.
I've got a golden ticket.
Right, exactly. Oh, no, it's exclusivary. I want everyone to float on together.
Yeah.
That's very modest mouse of
you. I know.
I was thinking that, too.
This song has been stuck in my head the past few days. So.
It's not a bad one.
It's not a great one. It's an average one.
Yeah. It's in purgatory, if you will.
It's in purgatory. And it's in the purgatory of songs.
Not all songs in purgatory are bad.
Wait, okay, but, like, what else would be in purgatory as far as songs to be stuck
oh
in
Oh, my God,
go?
So many songs.
All of
I would
Mariah
feel like,
Carey?
Yeah, I think any pop song is in purgatory. Like, yeah, have you ever heard?
It's not good.
Yeah, it's not great. Bad. No one's ever sat there and been like, this touches my heart. But it's fun, and you don't want to, like, put it in the hell of songs.
You can dance to it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's a lot of dancing in purgatory.
A lot of your favorite band's early work would probably be in purgatory.
Blink 182 is in hell. Just kidding.
Yeah, no, I was going to say, I thought they were going to say they were in purgatory, and I was like, no, they take
went,
that back.
They went down the other step. They went the wrong way.
Yeah.
They took the road that nobody should travel by. Oh.
And then people listen to them, I'm like, great, we are no longer friends.
Oh my goodness. My boyfriend has, like, no offense, I guess, but, like, horrible taste in music. Like, he's, like, super into, like, the early 2000s emo music, stuff like, yeah. Like, I don't think he listens to Blink-182.
But he'd be like, I like this.
Clash, is he into, like,
Clash at the Disco, something like that?
Oh, Panic at the Disco.
Panic at the Disco. That's, like, one of his favorite bands. And I'm like...
I used to like Panic at the Disco.
I know. I'm like, what are you, a 13-year-old girl?
Panic at the Disco was, like, an extension of Fall Out Boy. Yeah. Oh, I feel okay. Like they, like, it, like, grew out of the same... unfortunate impulse for, like, yeah. American, like, Northeastern kids.
Yeah. Like, emo, quote-unquote.
So what do you listen to, Nasa?
Oh,
he has
goodness.
Bad taste.
I know.
Who
I'm sitting here, like, dishing his
I'm like, I listen to the Spice Girls, so what?
I mean, listen. Embrace it. But, no, I mean, he doesn't have horrible taste. Also, he and I have a lot of similar favorite bands. It's just whenever he leaves Pandora on, I'm like, you're changing this now. We're done. no, but for me, it's I have, like, three favorite bands, and then that's it. I have the Decemberists, Modest, or not Modest Mouse, oh my goodness. The Decemberists, Mountain Goats, and Magnetic Fields are my three favorite. And I have, like,
solid
Stars.
Choices.
I like Stars, and I listen to them. And I have, like, I enjoy other music. This isn't just all, like, I listen to. But
just the same albums on repeat.
Yeah, I'm like, that is it. I will never listen to anything else. But then I like, there's nothing else that, like, is on my Spotify or that I seek out because I guess I'm lame.
Well, they actually, I think the New York Times last year came out with this article about how most people stop listening to new music after they turn 30.
I saw that. Yeah.
I think it's true. I mean, I'm still exploring, but as my musical history goes, I was raised by 90s country and Enya. So I didn't even know who the Beatles were until college. So
oh my God.
I'm like still exploring.
See, I do like the Beatles. I have some of those that came in from a while ago.
I like the Beatles a lot. I have the Beatles tattooed on me, which was, like, not a great first tattoo choice because...
Could have been worse.
Could have been worse. And now I kind
it's
of...
It's a purgatory tattoo.
It is. It might be a purgatory tattoo. Yeah. And I look at it and I'm kind of like, what were you thinking, 18-year-old Katie?
What is it?
It's that black and white photo from of them, like, jumping in the air from Help.
Okay.
So I have that on my side, and it's, like, pretty big. Like, as soon as they finished the outline, I was like, oh, my God, I have to sit here for 2 more hours while they color this in. What have I done?
Tattoos. Yeah, your first was on your side?
Yeah.
So my first was on my side,
too. Oh, my God, twinsies.
Oh, yeah, we have parallel tattoo stories.
but that was a thing that I did, and I was just like, well... I have this now, and I actually don't regret it, but it was just, like, I should
At
not have...
At some point, you were like, maybe this wasn't the best idea.
Yeah, not a bad idea, but just not the best idea that I could have had.
I should have sat on it for a little bit longer.
You know how it is.
I'm pretty impulsive, actually, with my tattoos as well. So.
I super am. I'll just be
I
like...
I just love tattoos in general, so at the end of the day, I'm really going to like it no matter what it is, even if it's terrible. I'm like... It's mine. It's on my body now.
But I have it. Yeah.
I'm so paranoid about tattoos. It's such a silly thing. Because, like, okay, had I gotten the tattoo I wanted to get in high school, I'd have a Tweety Bird on my body.
Ooh,
so
I have a friend with the
Powerpuff. I'm glad I didn't do that.
Yeah.
Your 19-year-old.
No, it was like 16-year-old self was like, I want a Tweety Bird. And then I was like, why do I want this?
Yeah, some tattoos will age you as, like, your history when you got it. Anyways.
Right now I'm debating a white cat. Just like a tiny white cat.
No. I just got a cat.
What?
Like an actual
cat
or a tattoo?
A tattoo cat.
No, yeah, not an actual cat. Oh, I wish. My roommate's allergic. And also, my life is really unsettled. So I shouldn't get a cat.
That's very responsible of you.
It's just strange. I grew up hiding kittens in my room until my dad found them and he'd make me get rid of them. Aww. And then I'd find another one. And now I'm like, no, I can't take care of you. Speaking of, like, you know, mental maturity and the things you do as a child. Yeah. what you do now. Anyways, where were we? What were we talking about?
Your poems and titles and such. I have a question that I think is a little obvious, but I'm also just curious about it.
Oh, yeah.
Do you ever run into a situation where through editing, your poem becomes something completely different?
Sometimes. Just sometimes.
Like,
I'm just going to leave it at that.
Like, you started out with this angry feminist poem that actually turned... Just kidding.
Actually turned into, like, a piece of mansplaining.
Yeah.
No. Like. No, I mean, definitely, like, sometimes a poem will change drastically in that, like, a lot of editing is just, like, this sucks, and just, like, scrapping, like, all of the stuff. Like, killing your darlings, basically.
Yeah. It's like the remolding of an idea for... like 400 times, and then it's some, like, it ends up being something similar to what you did on the 10th time, but you had to do it 400 times to get what you actually got.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so there's that crux where you're like, this is shit and it's not salvageable, and I just ruined it, and then you're like, oh.
I guess I'm just wondering, because, like, Pokemon, throwing this in right now because of the whole Pokemon Go thing.
This is happening.
Yeah, it's happening.
It's happening, you guys.
You know when you, like, you can evolve your Pokemon and you can evolve them into one or the other? Mainly Eevee, I guess, is the one that you can do this with, where you can either make Eevee a water Pokemon, a fire Pokemon, or an electric Pokemon.
Right.
And do you ever find that you get into that position with your poem where you're like, this can go this way, or this way? Which road do I follow?
Oh, yeah, all the time.
Oh, the road not taken.
Boom.
That's the one you follow.
10 points to Gryffindor.
Oh, my God.
Thank you. It would be Ravenclaw. Just the...
It would be Gryffindor for me, and I think that was for me, so Lion.
Oh, no, I'm Hufflepuff, but I mean, I feel like that's something a Ravenclaw would say.
Oh, gee. I'm listening to Harry Potter right now, so that's really great, because this morning I was listening to... Well, so this is always the part where I'm like, Sirius just died. Spoiler alert.
Right.
In what I'm reading, and I'm like... Now it's all darkness for me. Do I even want to keep going with this?
What's the point of this?
I know.
But it gets so much better.
Yeah, but you have to get to that part.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I know. It's tough.
And Harry just being a douche.
Oh, my God. And you just want to shake him.
Right? Yeah.
That's why I couldn't read Twilight, honestly. And also Hunger Games as a book. There's some parts where you're like, Katniss, seriously? Stop thinking. We'll all be happier.
Like, I know. But at least with Katniss, I can get it. Well, to be fair, Harry Potter is dealing with life and death situations, too. But I feel like
and
Katniss
puberty.
Is...
And
life, death, and puberty.
Yeah. We all have to do it.
We all have to get through it one way or another.
All right. This is wonderful. We have 8 minutes because we're having fun. We like to end with rapid fire, which is a quick series of questions. The answer can be, I don't know. The answer can be... long. Who cares?
Okay.
So I will start and commandeer one of Nasa's favorite questions because I can. Since we've been talking about so much pop fiction, is there any podcast or Netflix show that you're currently addicted to?
Answers are hard. I've been addicted to a streaming service that's not Netflix. It's called Shudder, and it's like Netflix for bad horror movies. And so you're all welcome. And Cooper Wilhelm, who was on this show with you, I just discovered, which, like, hi, Cooper. I hope you're listening right now. He introduced me to it, and then I was like, oh, my God, I have to tell my boyfriend because we just watch terrible movies on purpose. We saw, you all should watch Society. It's terrible. It's a really bad horror movie. And so we were like, yay! So we've been watching all of the really awful horror movies on Shudder, Shudder.
Oh, I must confess, I've never gotten into watching horror. I'm scared of it.
Oh, I'm such a jumper. I'm so bad at it.
I don't like being scared.
I had a roommate who loved horror, and she's the only reason I'm, like, super into it now. She would be like, sit me down.
Yeah, I think you have to have a certain amount of exposure, and then you, quote-unquote, get it. Yeah.
I don't watch those scary ones, and I don't watch the, like, ones like Saw and shit like that.
No,
I can't do any of those.
Like,
cutting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh. Can I just throw in here? I don't know if you watch it on a Roku, but if anyone has a Roku, I highly recommend the station PubDHub. Because you can find old, like, it's old cartoons, old movies, and best of all, old cautionary films / information films.
The best.
Oh.
Yeah. They're so good. They're incredibly absurd, and that's what makes them really entertaining. There's, like, how to ride your bike, are you ready to get married, how do you ask a girl out. Like, it's so much fun. And so my boyfriend and I will just sit there and be like, what can we learn about today?
That sounds perfect.
You're welcome. just kidding. That was speaking for you.
But
do you have a question?
I do have a question. It's, I think, one I haven't seen before, and I'm pretty excited about it. And I'm going to interpret it however I want. So,
kind of snobby.
Well, what is your favorite brag? And I feel like this could mean anything, but if you want to specify writing, it could be like brag book you own, brag book you've read, or brag thing that's happened to you. Like,
okay, this is a good one. I just said this to my brother the other day, actually, who, he's also a writer, Peter Longafano. Look him up. He's
Longafano.
That's what.
Oh, yeah! Mostly because I just said it right after you did.
Yeah, you did. That's
but that
good.
Happened at the bar like 3 times. You said your name, and I was like, walk. Broken.
Broken. I can't do it.
Anyways, continue.
Anyway, so I was talking to my brother about this, and I was like, yeah, so I just did, like, a few readings in a row, and each time I got solicited to, like, send my poems or, like, to do this, and then I was like, and then Swan asked me to be on her podcast, and like one other person asked me to be on their podcast. I was like, so now I have a podcast section on my website.
Yay! I'm glad that your brag is like includes me.
Yeah,
that's very cool.
Success.
My brag would be that I went to Oxford and visited where C.S. Lewis wrote Alice in Wonderland, as well as oh my goodness. J.R.R. Tolkien was
The Eagle and the Wren.
Yes, I visited there, but I was also at a school.
Or The Eagle and Child, sorry.
Yeah, The Eagle and Child. I went there.
I like Wren too.
Yeah.
And yeah, so that's my big literary brag, I suppose.
I don't have a literary brag, but my usual brag is that I lived in a treehouse, and that's like
that's pretty good.
I like to self-dub myself the queen of eclectic living situations. There's a good like 5 years that I lived in a lot of strange places.
That's right. Yeah, you were telling me a little bit about that. Yeah, so that's yeah.
And that question comes from James, who's been on our show a couple times because
oh, nice.
It's well, good to have brags.
Thank you, James.
Thank you, James.
Yeah, it's also good to have an excuse to pull out your brag.
Yeah.
That way you don't feel like a
it's
douche.
Not like at a party. So what do? You're like, my favorite brag is I was a mutton buster. Like
a mutton buster?
Right, a sheep. I was that, too. I just snuck in another brag there. Do you guys want to do another one?
Yeah, one more, I think. Do we have time for another?
Just kidding.
Second, oh, you mean another brag?
Yeah.
Golly gee. I feel like I have a lot of humble brags from the fact when I worked at NYU grad acting, where I would meet, like, a lot of people. Through that, so I'd be able to be like one of my good friends is currently in The Color Purple on Broadway, and I'll sneak that in, and I'm like, the only reason he's my good friend is because I worked at this place where he went to school, which seems unfair, but also I'm like, yeah, one of my friends.
You know who you know. You know who you know.
Yeah, yeah. Isaiah Johnson. Sorry for mispronouncing that.
Oh, nice. I might delete it if I'm feeling energetic. So I edit the shows, and I think you could probably guess the mood I was in when I edited it. Some of them, I'm like, meh.
Leave it.
I'm done. It's good enough.
Do you have another brag that you...
Do you want to throw another brag out?
Another brag.
You don't have to.
You're so humble.
That's actually one of the things I'm most proud of.
Yeah, I just want to brag for a minute about how humble I am. No, I don't operate well under pressure.
That's okay. I feel like we've had a really good experience, all things considered.
Yeah.
Yeah, so thank you so much for coming.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming. Yeah. And you guys, I'll post links, check out Katie. She's really fun. And she has a monthly reading series, always on Sunday, mm-hmm. always at 8, not always the second Sunday. And I'll post some other links, and Yeah. Empty Orchestra is next, enjoying the dynamic relationship between song and singer in the context of karaoke. And I'll leave you with a word, take it or leave it. Elephantine.
That's such a good word. Appropriate.
Sorry, let's do that again. I say dance, you say dance. I say friends, you say France. You're from Adelaide, I'm from Hobart. I say Hugh, you say Grant. I say pot, you say plant.